Welcome to the Red Card District Group G Preview. Joining us today is Mark Cunningham.
Hello.
You can follow him on Twitter at Mark with a C, JC88. And joining us is Robert Burns.
You can follow What's up,
him
guys?
You can follow him on Twitter at Robert WFD. So we are going to be breaking down Group G.
Groping down
Group G. Yeah. I don't know. I enjoy. There's some fine German women.
We've got to the women. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Well,
already.
Anyways, we're going to start from the top, though. We're going to talk about Germany. Now, Robert Burns wrote our piece for the Red Card District about Germany. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you think about the depth of the squad and what you think they're going to be able to achieve?
Well, depth-wise, there's, you know, I mean, I don't think it's any secret to anybody out there that they're, you know, they're by far one of the deepest teams in the tournament. And especially with the amount of injuries that they've suffered, guys like Bender, obviously Gundogan, and the most important one was Marco Reus. You know, other teams just don't recover from something like that. When you're talking about Germany, all of a sudden you've got guys like, you know, Thomas Müller can fit into that spot, or Julian Draxler, or you can slip in Podolski over there. So it's pretty amazing the strength and depth that Germany has. They're really not weak at any position. The only question marks are obviously going to be a lot of the guys are coming back from injuries, namely the goalkeeper, Neuer, who had a shoulder injury. And as big a deal as that sounds as far as shot stopping, he's so good with the ball at his feet and his distribution. I mean, he's practically a deep midfielder sometimes back there, a libero at worst. And so I don't think it'll affect distribution very much, but potentially some shot stopping early. But obviously Lahm coming back from an injury, Kadir is back from a long-term injury. There's a lot of knocks, Schweinsteiger as well. There's so many knocks that it's going to be a question of how quickly they kind of get back up to game pace. And then the other most important thing, I think, is going to be what's going to happen with Philipp Lahm. He's the best right back in the world, but he hasn't been playing there. So Löw is kind of following a little bit in the footsteps of Pep's plan, where he stuck him in the middle, which he's absolutely fantastic in that position. I don't agree with it personally. I think it was a disaster in the first leg against Real Madrid in the semifinals of the Champions League. I just think that they have good options back there with Schweinsteiger and Kadira. It's a question of, you know, obviously how fit those guys stay. But
so you'd like to see him on the right?
I think, to me, it's like they have to. Because here's your other options. The problem is that, look, Mertesacker, Hummels, these guys are they're great 85 minutes of a game, but there's generally always going to be a moment. This is like I don't even want to call it a weak spot because they're still very, very good, all right? Nobody's having a hard time, you know, predicting Germany at the very minimum to the semifinals. It's just that they're pretty genuinely reliable to make at least one big mistake. Now, if you want to put on the fullbacks, now you're probably going to have a guy on the left, this kid Eric Durm, who's basically filled in for Marcel Schmelzer, same team, Dortmund. Yes. Young kid, first World Cup, not a lot of caps. He could be absolutely stellar. He really could. But then again, he could get lost in the moment. And then you've got, if you don't have Lahm playing in the right back position, you're going to have a makeshift right back, either Kevin Grosskreutz, or you're going to have Jerome Boateng, who his preference is obviously center back. So it's a little bit makeshift if you don't have Lahm back there. I think if you do have him back there, he's the best one in the world at his position. He's got experience. He's been here before. He can marshal that back line even from the right. He's your captain. I think he can do a lot more back there, and I think that they're losing a lot less in the center of midfield by using, you know, like I said, Kadira, Schweinsteiger, whoever else. They can also put Toni Kroos back there. I think it's a mistake that Yogi Löw should learn from what happened to Pep against Real, where they just got stormed on that side when it was, I believe it was Rafinha, who was playing on the right side. So in general, though, depth-wise, you can't, there's nothing even to talk about up top. They have so many interchangeable parts, and they're always moving. They're probably going to play some crazy version of a 4-6-0 where everybody's just moving around either side. You can't keep up with anybody. There's no man marking because you're going to be running yourself ragged in 93-degree temperatures, all across the field trying to pick one guy out. You can't do it. They're all over the place. So the only question marks, I think, are going to be at the fullback positions. And if you put Lam back there, that solves one of those problems in a very big way.
Do you believe that Miroslav Klose will beat the record?
I do. I think... He just kind of comes together at this particular point. And I honestly think that... he's going to get his looks, and they're going to go deep. There's no way around it, and he'll have his opportunities. You also have to remember that they're probably going to get either Russia or Belgium in the second round. So Belgium would be a pretty for them as well. I just think that he needs two. I don't think that he's going to have a problem doing it.
He'll probably be getting them off the bench. I mean, we're not likely to see him start, really, don't you think?
I don't think he will either. I certainly don't think he's going to start the first game against Portugal. But he might against the U.S. That could be something that they could kind of feel like. It really just depends on what position they're in by that third game.
Who do you think will start against Portugal up front?
What's that?
Who do you think will start? Is it Gomez or Muller?
Well, Gomez isn't even there.
Isn't on the squad.
Gomez isn't even on the squad.
No, he left out.
Gomez is sitting in Italy somewhere enjoying a cappuccino or something. So, and that was, that was a big question mark as well. Was it a mistake to only bring one 36-year-old target striker? That's a big issue. It could be, but obviously you've seen, it didn't hurt Spain 4 years ago. So they can get away with it. And I think, like I said, when you've got, Thomas Müller was the last, golden boot winner. So, they're not suffering for scoring goals. Royce is a huge loss for sure.
He's a big loss. I was gonna ask you, Mark, what do you think about Royce's omission from the squad? I mean, after suffering that ankle injury just a couple days ago, how big of an impact do you think it's going to affect their chances? Because I feel like he brought a lot of goals for them. I mean, he's the kind of guy that could fill the void of a striker.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you kind of imagine him to be on the same ranks as like a Gareth Bale would, somebody who could bring a lot of pace and speed down those flanks and cut in, even like how a Robin would, and fire a few shots at the corner, at least create some disarray amongst the defense. Without that, I mean, you're really relying on Lukas Podolski, who, is sort of inconsistent, I guess, when it comes to goal scoring at the very least. They'll definitely be lacking a lot of pace down that wing. I mean, whatever wing they were planning on playing Royce, but his versatility and everything provided them with a lot of options, I guess, and to spread out players. Like you said, with the 4-6-0, I mean, you're really losing, I guess, sort of that dedicated.
Well, I feel like with a Royce, he plays a good false nine because he seems like the kind of guy that could be a winger that could convert into a striker.
Right.
I mean, he seems like he's got the physical mold. I mean, he's not huge, but he's got enough of a physical presence. I mean, height and stature wise, I mean, he's not broad shouldered or anything, but he can really bring a lot in, and he knows how to make those incisive runs like an instinctive striker.
Right. Yeah, but after the season that Schürrle's had, do you think that Joachim Löw will probably go for him over Podolski?
That's a tough call. I mean, I would say that Podolski is more well-established with the rest of the guys, and I think I like to use the term cohesiveness. I mean, a lot of these teams that have seen success in the past, they just want to bring back that team to this World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I think Podolski is going to get minutes, for sure.
Certainly more now that Marco Royce is not going to be involved.
I think his
minutes probably at least doubled now that Royce is out. Because that's the exact spot.
But they've got guys that can move around on either side. Like I said, you've got so many guys that can play the middle and play the wings, right? You've got, obviously, Thomas Müller. You've got Julian Draxler, like I was saying. There's so many different guys that can move around in there. And again, the idea of them having like this kind of, prototypical number nine up there. I think it's you know, what we learned from Barcelona was, like, I think it's great to have a plan B, and what better plan B, in a sense, if they ever come to a point where they're going to need it, which is
throw Klose up top.
Fine. Absolutely. You've got Klose then. You know what I mean? You've got your plan B. They can do anything in there. All of those guys are so good at finding the other guys in close spaces around the box. And they're so dynamic that you know, it's just a nightmare for defenders because they're running every single direction. And they've got guys, like I said, coming from every single angle. They're cutting across. They're switching sides. They're doing so much. It's going to be a nightmare matchup for anybody. The Germany, and I said this in the article that I wrote, was, you know, Germany goes as far as Yogi Löw keeps faith in what he's doing, as opposed to him changing, you know, formations, bringing in Kwos at the end when they were playing at Euro 2012, you know, because he panicked when he saw Italy, and he changed everything that they've been doing brilliantly up until that time. He has got to stay the course because everybody else should be adjusting to Germany, not the other way around. And if he loses his nerve, then the same thing will happen and he'll fail again. He has got to just stick to what they do best and make everybody else adjust to him. He's got to have that mentality. If he can do that, then there's no reason they don't win.
Okay, so assuming that Lahm starts at right back, what do you see the team being, the lineup for Germany?
Mertesacker and Hummels, obviously the center back pairing, Neuer. This Eric Durm is going to be on the left. You've got Schweinsteiger and Khedira in the pivot. I would say, you know, it's a tough call if they're going to play either Kwos or Ötzel. I just, you know, Ötzel's kind of like, you guys were, who was it? I think, Joaquin, you were mad at me because I forgot to bring up Ötzel in the thing.
Oh, and I had to give you shit because there was not one mention of his name. Way, I had almost to say something. I just told him it was his
manager. Yeah, but I think bias, in a way, clearly, after everything he's gone through, it's almost a good thing that he's kind of not the topic, right? I mean, he really hasn't been the topic that everybody's talked about pre-World Cup. Which
I think the expectation is that he's going to start. I mean, that's...
And that's realistic, too. So you put him in the middle, and then you've got Götze on the left, or Podolski. Götze or Podolski on the left, and then obviously Thomas Müller on the right. And then, Jesus, he's just throwing it. I mean, it's so weird. They just got so many different things.
Well, it looks like, I mean, Schürrle's been starting the friendly. So you think they're going to start him at the point up front, so to speak?
Nah, Schürrle, if any place, I think he'd play on the left somewhere as well.
You think on the left?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he can play both. I think actually, when he had that hat trick against Fulham for Chelsea, I'm pretty sure he was playing on the right too. So there you go. I mean, it's not like there's any position that they can't switch.
Yeah, a lot of those players are so fluid, and I think the one thing, and I noticed it with Arsenal as well, is that the Podolski is one of the guys that is not so fluid. He doesn't really interchange the way the same other ones do. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my favorite things to watch, I remember Wayno, especially once Arsenal signed Ozil, everyone's watching videos and stuff, and you watch his time with Germany, how well he interchanged with Royce down the wing, and right. You know, players like that, with them, with Müller, with Schürrle, with Götze, I mean, those guys have such great technical ability that the interchangeability is so easy for them, whereas Podolski doesn't, even when he's playing in a team with Mesut Ozil and Santi Cazorla and all that, he's not really the guy who interchanges and does that. He doesn't really fit that mold. But he gives them some incisive crosses. I mean, his delivery was great. I mean, what we saw, I mean, I guess the only thing they could have done to soothe the blow of Marco Reus's injury in that last friendly was the fact that they bombarded that squad with what? They scored 6 goals in the second half?
Yeah.
I mean, Podolski got a brace and a couple assists, right? Something like that. Yeah. I mean, they ran rampant, and we saw, you know, what this team is capable of because the amount of talent they have in the attacking third is up there with the top of any squad.
Oh, anywhere, yeah. And it's harsh to call him, you know, static, but in comparison to the other guys, he is. But you know, he had a great, you know, I think he had a really good season for Arsenal as well. Me personally, I know that's something that's argued by some other people who.
His numbers are good. If you look at all the stats and his conversion rates and what he scored, I mean, he missed several months because he had a terrible hamstring injury. You know, a grade 3 hamstring.
And back to Schürrle. Schürrle is also a guy that you could also put up front at that 4-2.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well. You know, you can move around. You can put Thomas Müller up there. You can put Schürrle up there, and so. Yeah, I mean, I can't venture a guess exactly. I think just a lot of it's going to come down to, you know, who's kind of ready to go, either way they go, when you talk about whatever they start with, when you see the subs bench and they start bringing in those guys, I mean, the defenses are just going to have a nightmare, especially when it's and late, and then they're going to be all of a sudden, oh, here, we're going to put in Draxler. Oh, hey, we're going to put in Podolski. You know, all this kind of speed to burn. You know, the defenses are just going to go nuts late in those games with those subs because you know, they're just not losing anything anywhere. And, you know, the rest of the group is rejoicing that Royce is out, I'll tell you that. But, you know, don't do it too much because the rest of the team's going to do just fine.
It just makes me bring into question. I mean, there's definitely more predictability having Podolski on the left. But seeing as how they didn't opt for any size whatsoever, leaving Gomez out, yeah. Do you think that Ozil in that role would reduce the pace that they're sort of trying to maintain, that they're going to try and maintain throughout the competition?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that they're going to try and do every. I mean, that's how they work. That's they work at pace. You know, I think when you saw Ozil's slide at Arsenal, mm-hmm. I think the main reason that happened was twofold. He lost Walcott and he mm-hmm. lost Oxlade-Chamberlain for periods.
We had Santi, Podolski, Chamberlain, and Walcott out all at the same time.
Right. So he does his best. I think Ozil is at his best. He's finding speed running on the flanks. And he finds those so well. It's what he had at Real.
We could have used Jorginho at that time because a guy like that. I mean, a guy with pace that could actually make runs. I mean, you look at how well he did. I mean, if you utilize someone and you can feed him the right way, that's the thing. Ozil, if you give him players with pace, he'll find that pass.
Exactly.
And when you have is Giroud at that time, because and you're playing Rosicky and Cazorla on the wings, they don't have pace to get behind defenders.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that's when he started kind of looking bad, and then they started keying in on him, and then the physicality kind of got to him a little bit. You know, he's obviously still a quality player, and I think he'll show a lot better with Germany than he did at the end of the season with Arsenal. It's still in his pocket, but yeah, I just think that they're going to be running at everybody. You know, and they're going to have to they're going to have to be somewhat conservative just because of, you know, the climate down there, I think. You know, it's going to be ridiculously hot in some places where they're playing. So, you know, that's going to factor in a little bit. But, you know, let's face it, this is the World Cup. They're going to go 100 miles an hour. And it's going to be up to everybody else to stop them. So I don't think that'll change very much because of, you know, whatever other factors, be it the opposition, the weather, or whatever. You know, they might, you know, burn themselves out at some point. But again, they have so many different guys to bring in at all times that, you know, I think there's going to be a decent amount of rotation, especially in those front three. I think there'll be a lot of rotation in there because they're not losing a lot with whichever setup they go with.
Yeah, definitely. So we've talked a lot about Germany. Moving on to Cristiano Ronaldo, Portugal, I mean.
Never heard of him.
Portugal.
There's nothing you could say that would insult him more than saying that.
Ronaldo.
If you told Ronaldo that you never heard of him.
Cristiano. Okay.
That's the biggest thing you do is hack it.
Did he used to play for Man United?
He did for a little while.
I don't remember that.
He was mildly successful with our club. Oh. Yeah.
He was Jemba Jemba's backup.
Jemba Jemba.
Portugal have an interesting team outside Cristiano Ronaldo.
Sure.
And it's a team that, well, the expectations up and down with them, you know? They have some players that you'd consider class, and you have there are some players that are just below that,
right?
I mean, what do you see from them?
I see. Okay, you know, I don't think there's really not much that needs to be said about Ronaldo, right? I mean, there's nobody in the world who doesn't know what he does, what he brings, what he can do. I think his presence obviously raises the game of everybody else around him, but you still have a squad that is very Jekyll and Hyde. I think that they're very they play to the level of their competition. If you look at – they made a meal of qualifying, right? They had some bad results. I think it was Northern Ireland and Israel where they drew at home.
Yeah, as usual. I mean, that's they're perennial underachievers.
Right. And they've also never once since Eusebio found another proper – forward, which is amazing. You know, you can say Paulette,
Nuno Gomez was like one of my favorites growing up.
Yeah, but again, not at that level. That's going to be, you know, that's
how dare you, sir? How dare you?
So, you know, Pauleta was probably the closest, only because he scored a bunch of junk goals. But Pauleta was fine. But again, he doesn't.
He doesn't count as a player.
Is he still in the squad?
He should be. So, you know, when you're talking about, look at who's up front again. You've got Postiga, you've got Almeida, you know, these guys that have been, you know, they've tried it over and over again, and it's never going to work in that sense. So your strength with Portugal, they're probably going to, you know, do that variant, but it's probably going to be a 4-3-3. I think Nani is going to be huge. If Nani plays like he can, and as a United fan, you didn't really see a lot of him this year, but...
You won't next year either. What's that? He's gonna play very well at the World Cup. He's gonna come back and
very expensive bench warm.
Yeah, but again, come on, you've seen what he can do when he does. When he's on, he's fantastic. So
yeah, people should. I don't think many people doubt his talent.
So. No,
yeah.
Not at all.
It's a Jekyll and Hyde affair, I think, with Portugal. So, you know, their center backs pairing is strong. You know, Bruno Alves and Pepe are very, very strong. Like I said, this Carvalho kid who's going to be right in front of them is going to be very tough. I don't think that they're going to be a walk in the park as much as everybody thinks they are, that, you know, you just have to kind of stop Ronaldo, which is impossible. So, you know, you just have
to injure him. I mean,
you could do that. Yeah. But basically, Portugal starts every game up 1-0, and it's up to you to figure out how to just kind of outscore them.
So they're going to play Contral at left back. Who are they playing at right back? Because Bisingwa is no longer...
No, he's not with them. No longer with us.
Ferreira would be at right back,
right. Yeah. And will the midfield have Matinho and Miguel Veloso?
I don't think Veloso would be in. Probably, like I said, Carvalho.
That's a big decision, though. If he takes Veloso's place, that's a massive goal.
I think he is. I think he had that good of a season, and I think that, like I said, they're gonna try some new things. But you've got Moutinho back there, who opinion varied on. I thought he played great at the last Euro. I thought he was fantastic. A lot of people didn't. I thought he did really, really well, and I think you put him back there with Veloso, with Carvalho. And then you've got Morelos, who's coming back. Morelos is again. He's essentially Portugal. He is Jekyll and Hyde, right? Can have amazing.
His entire appearance shows it.
But he certainly. Well, I don't mind the appearance. He always only wanted to look punk rock while, you know,
it's beautiful.
I've always been fine with that. But I mean, the thing is, he's taken a step down in the caliber of league he plays in, and it seems like he doesn't bring it as consistently as he once did. I mean, he had a stretch when he played at Chelsea where he actually was a pretty solid player
and then went to Liverpool
consistently for a little bit.
For a year.
Yeah, but you guys always make I think people in general always make this assumption that just because a player changes leagues that all of a sudden everything that they've learned and every quality that they have goes downhill within.
Well, maybe what I think is the tough thing, because where did he go? Did he go to Fenerbahce or something? He went Galatasaray?
He went to Fenerbahce.
And then, like, the thing is, you hardly ever see him. And then you saw him in such a – we saw him in such a lackluster side at the time that had a few players that
Arsenal destroyed Fenerbahce. That's why we think that.
That's probably why. I mean, well, but it's the fair thing is that when you go to that league and no one watches you anymore, and the few times you see them, you know, they're a part of a contingent of a team that has a lot of past their prime stars in it, which a lot, you know, the Turkish league is a haven for a lot of players when they leave a
Schneider.
Well, I mean, for a lot of players.
Are you calling it the European MLS?
I wouldn't go that far. But see, now that you're the European. And now he's trying to shit on the MLS. Come on, man.
Who, me?
I don't need to do that. It's already full of shit. Yeah,
well. Never, ever. But that's what I'm saying. Like, again, and we'll get to the U.S. later, but, you know, everybody, Bradley and Dempsey, they moved back. They're going to be horrible. They didn't forget everything they did just by coming over here for 4 or 5 months, right? I don't think that's, you know, maybe long term, maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, but when, you know, that might affect how they play and their general, you know. But same thing with these guys. Like, I think
the coaching affects a little bit too, the manager and the coaching staff. I think that affects it.
And speaking of, I love Bento. I think he's a refreshing coach. I think he's great. His insights, I think the way he looks at the game is wonderful. I like his presence a lot. I like Bento a lot. And like I said, I think Portugal's not a one trick pony. It's just that you just don't know which other team is going to show up on any given day. Some days they can look, you know, don't take that result against Ireland to sit there and say, okay, they're going to be like that in every single game. That's obviously not the case. You just, if you get them on a day when the other guys are just, not, you know, just disappear a little bit, then they're absolutely beatable. But if you don't, if you get them when everybody's firing, you know, then you know, you're going to have a tough time. So, you know, none of these are going to be easy games for the U.S. for sure.
Definitely.
But they are beatable. Like I said, I don't think that, you know, I think I'm pretty sure it was Northern Ireland that came into Lisbon and played 1-1, if I'm not mistaken, during qualifying. And, you know, it's a different level at the World Cup. But, you know, like I said, Jekyll and Hyde, you want to get them on the days that they're going to be a little bit off, hopefully. And you know, you let Ronaldo.
So score. Nani epitomizes the team then. Nani
Morelos. Yeah. No. There's so many players that do epitomize it because you have Moutinho, you have guys like Morelos, you have guys Contrao, like Nani, Contrao. You have Contrao. That can be as equally frustrating as they are brilliant.
Yeah, I think for William Carvalho, I mean that's going to be his big moment because he's had an incredible season at Sporting. Sure. And he has a lot of qualities.
You don't see much of Sporting.
No, but he's going to get out this summer because his agent is Jorge freaking Mendes. And he's going to sell him to some rich club.
United will take him gladly.
Yeah.
If they pay $9 million for agent fees, which they probably will.
They will.
They'll pay that premium because they don't have the Champions League.
Yeah. But will he go there because of the... Will he go there? I don't know. I would love him at Arsenal, to be honest.
Oh, he's not coming to us.
I know.
You know.
I know.
It'll never happen.
Moving on to the US of A.
Oh.
The land of the somewhat free.
Get the fuck out of here. Okay. How are you introducing our country? This guy. No.
10% of your country are in jail. Okay, let's not go there. Okay.
All right. This isn't a political debate.
Anyways, moving on to America. Yeah, we got a comment from Alex. That was great. Moving on to USA. This is a team that I think it's fair to say we think the level of football has been raised here in the United States, or soccer as we call it, and we have seen the quality go up, and they had a good qualifying campaign. Mm-hmm. Team looked pretty good, and we went into that draw, and then we just got kind of...
shafted.
That's a nicer way to say it. And you know, we end up with one of the groups of death. Mm-hmm. So to speak, with danger all about, as well, you know, featuring someone who you could argue is the world's best player on one team, and another team that is...
I wouldn't call it the group of death. I would call it the group of depth.
Okay. Group of depth. It is the group of depth.
All right.
I'm with you there. You should have told me this beforehand. That could be our title.
Sorry, that will be our title next time.
Right. This will be the group G preview.
Someone patent that.
I just came up with that.
I don't know. No, it's fantastic.
In your own mind brain?
In my own mind brain.
Would you like a cookie?
Yes, I would like a cookie. Keep telling me I want cookies.
I'm sorry. He needs Venice cookies, apparently. That's what he keeps asking for. So they have looked quite decent through qualifying. Klinsmann's experiment has looked great so far. He's made a huge decision in leaving off our most experienced and...
Most decorated player.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll certainly get into into depth right now.
Alexi Lalas.
I mean, I personally think I'm one of the few people who might think that it was a good decision. I don't know. I think this is a U.S. team that's maybe not trying to dwell on nostalgia here. They're just trying to move forward and really take it to their opponents and.
Nostalgia.
Yeah.
Did you hear what we were talking about with Germany and Klose? You know?
Yeah.
You want that vet on the bench.
But that is
Are
Germany
you telling
who
me
can
you
afford.
Want to. But hold on. No. Yeah. Germany could afford it. If it was Germany, they could be like, all right, sorry, Donovan. We have Marco. Well, not Marco Royce anymore, but Draxler. Yeah. Draxler goes. I mean, the numbers are right. It's quite different in terms of the depth, the quality here. And you're going to try to tell me that is something that's comparable to the U.S. When you're telling me it's Brad Davis.
Come on,
Davis.
The experience of Julian Green will win the tournament.
That 18-year-old Munich player. Well, I mean, I feel that they were trying to maybe forcibly pass the torch to Clint Dempsey here.
I think it's a fucking pissing contest.
Yeah? Well.
I mean, I think it's entirely a personal thing. It's an ego thing. I mean, look, Klinsmann did play for Tottenham Hotspur. He, you know, I honestly think it's just a big ego thing.
He makes bad choices in life. You know,
I mean, as has been proven. He is German too, and there's this, you know, certain hierarchy that Germans like to possess within their squad, where I guess you can't have a veteran player who has, I guess, more respect than you, and that might play into it. But I look at it as a progressive decision.
Robert, I know you've got some strong opinions on this issue. How do you feel about the exclusion of Landon Donovan?
Listen, I have no issues with the if it's a question of him starting or not. If his fitness, again, there's certain things that we don't know that we can only kind of guess from the commentary. As far as his fitness goes and things like that, I don't know if you guys watched the whole send-off TV show, the March to Brazil or whatever it was called. And, you know, they did that whole beep test thing, right?
Yeah.
Out of 30 guys, he finished third. Okay. So when they talk about his fitness, he's always been, you know, whatever the sabbatical, and they talk about, oh, he, you know, as far as I'm concerned, nobody ever put in the amount of miles that he has for American soccer, be it from starting at 16, 17 years old at Bayer Leverkusen, all the work that every single game he's approaching a record number of caps that Kobe Jones has. He's played so much football, and he's always been resilient, and he's always done it. And then all of a sudden, so nobody who carries the mantle for that long for a whole country. And doesn't, you know, I'm not saying he deserved a break or whatever, but it's not like he did it in the middle of a season. It's not
I'll say it. He deserved it. I mean, these players play through. You look at all. I mean, it's not a coincidence. All these injuries happen. Look at the injuries to a lot of these Spain players who've been playing. You know, when you play like 60, 70 matches in a season.
Exactly.
You know, and like you play long summers. Oh, well, I play for Spain. So guess what? I play until mid-July every season. Right. And I get 2 weeks off in the entire year.
Right. And the thing was, he you know, MLS already has one of the longer off seasons, right? You know, if you don't play an MLS Cup, you're off from basically the beginning of November, end of October until March, basically, right? So he took a little bit longer at the beginning of the season, came back. He said, Klinsmann, what do you want me to do? He said, come play in the Gold Cup. So what did he do? He led the tournament. He won the best player of the tournament. He held the trophy up. We killed everybody.
Didn't he win MLS that year after he came back from sabbatical also?
No. This was after the second one that they won in a row.
This was right after the second.
Right. So basically, so he comes back. He does everything that he asks him. Oh, okay. What have you done for me lately? Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll just score the goal against Mexico and provide the assist. That you know gets us into Brazil. What hasn't he done in order to justify his place at the very minimum in the 23? You know, that's what. And if you could tell me that there was somebody else who had displayed so much better, is it Brad Davis? What did Brad Davis do that's so much better? You know, if you say
Pete Donovan,
and that counts a lot in Klinsmann's mind, apparently.
What if you're talking about, everybody sat there and said, oh, Klinsmann's he's thinking about the youth, right? He's thinking about the youth. So he brings in Brad Davis, who's 6 months older than Donovan. So instead of taking Terrence Boyd, he takes Chris Wondolowski, who's older than Donovan. So it's
didn't understand Boyd's omission.
I think it was a personal choice for Klinsmann. I think he dislikes Donovan, and that's why he dropped him.
There's got to be a personal issue. That's why I said it was a pissing contest. There's something between them. There's something that we don't hear about, but everybody knows it. It's the elephant in the room. Everybody knows there's something between them.
Exactly. And
they've known each other too long, you know, and everyone talks about his spell back at Bayern when he was his signing, when he was the manager, and that didn't go well for him, and maybe he uses him as a scapegoat, and maybe it's a long-standing beef. I mean, you know, if anyone's going to hold a beef really long, would it be a cocky top kind of striker type player? You know, I mean, like these are the kind of people you would expect to hold a kind of grudge like that and do something, because it's all about having the upper hand. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But if it doesn't help him, if USA do terribly, it's going to go on Klinsmann no matter what, you know.
Well, right. But I mean, he got a little bit. I mean, it's not a get out of jail free card, but I mean, honestly, the group. I mean, just on paper, we don't get out of the group.
Yeah, but he's not going anywhere, so he's not worried about that. It doesn't matter what happens in this world.
Is he
going
to be the coach at the U.S. no matter what after the World Cup?
Well, I mean, they gave him the contract extension. He's through the next World Cup. That's what a lot of people think is part of the motivation here.
No matter.
That's what I mean. Progressive decisions here. You're passing that torch to.
But to what Robert said, look, if you want to pass the torch, there's players that you bring on instead of others, right? Like you said, look, Terrence Boyd, I think, is a talented player. And he should. If you want to think about the next World Cup, you bring in Terrence Boyd, not Wondolowski.
The other argument
was Brad Davis.
I guess Wondolowski is the counterweight to the unsafe decision.
But he was saying, oh, he's not in form. He hasn't been scoring or whatever. If that was an issue, then you can't take Jozy Altidore, right? Because, now, see, every single thing, every single argument that you might use for not bringing Donovan, you can find a counter argument for.
Absolutely.
He brought you, oh, it's about youth. No, it's not, because he brought in Davis and Wondolowski. Oh, he wasn't performing for his club. Well, why is Altidore there, right? So every single argument has a counter. At the very minimum, he should be on the 23. That's all it boils down to. But look, at this point, it's over. It's done with. There's no point in talking about it. You got to talk about the guys that are there and what they can do.
Just to finish up on that topic before we move forward on that. I mean, there's just, you know, like I think I heard Ray Hudson on some kind of XM satellite radio show like the day after the announcement. He was talking about it, and he made a very valid point. Is that like, this actually, you know, heaps more pressure on the rest of the United States players, because it's every time they miss, the burden is going to be on them because Landon Donovan would have put that away. Mm-hmm. And it's right. it's not a disservice to them, but what American fans have seen has been a Landon Donovan who's produced goals and really, you know, been the spark plug and the driving force behind this U.S. men's national team. And when you see chances go missing, things that are that someone of a certain level or caliber would put away, that's always going to be the question. And it actually I don't feel like it helps the squad in that sense.
Yeah, and the other understated fact is his versatility. You can play him on the wing. You can play him as an attacking midfielder.
On the bench, anywhere, yeah.
He can play up along.
No, but exactly. I mean, you want him on the bench. Like, you tell me. You look at our options as substitutes.
I know.
And that's like, you know, this, who do you want to have to come off the bench in a situation? You know, you're... You know, the match against Ghana might break our tournament. This reminds
me a lot of Beckham with England.
Right.
So this is what brings back memories for me. But Beckham was a little bit older than Donovan, and he offered less.
Yeah, but also when you're talking about the case of Beckham, the scoring burden, the one about producing goals, that was always going to be on Rooney or somebody else. It was never going to be on Beckham.
Exactly.
But when you look at Donovan,
has that big burden. Yeah.
The best player the U.S. has ever produced, and also the best player who's ever produced in World Cups.
I think that burden is now going to be shared between Bradley and Clint Dempsey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it has to be. And Jozy, obviously. Yeah, and they have to perform. And you know, like I said, I was really annoyed because here's the part that bothered me. It's not just about the team. This is about me. I get this only every 4 years. You know, I don't want to feel cheated out of it. I think about the older guys in the squad, right? You think about Tim Howard or whatever. You know, there's a very good chance that this is his last World Cup. Obviously, he wants to do well. And you could tell the way they were talking is just like, why are we being denied the best player that we've ever produced, the best player that we still have, at least, in, you know, again, I would pass the mantle. If you want to say who's the U.S. best player, obviously I'm going to say Michael Bradley. I would even maybe put Dempsey up ahead of Donovan.
Absolutely.
He's not top three or four guys on the teams to this day is preposterous to me. So, again, I feel cheated in a sense. Like, I get this only – I've waited 4 years. I my life goes in four-year cycles. I judge my life in four-year cycles.
But we waited and watched expecting – when we watched Donovan, expecting to see him suit up for the United States in another World Cup because that was the logical progression.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And to take the honor away of a fourth World Cup, you know, there's only so many guys that do that, you know. Congrats to Beasley, right? You know, there's only so many that do that. So to be taken away, and Alexi Lawless said one very good thing. He said, if you weren't going to have him on the team and you knew it, then you should have never let him back in after Cambodia, right? Don't come back and prove yourself. You're off, you're done, sabbatical, whatever it is. Don't sit there and use him for Gold Cup glory and to beat Mexico and do all that stuff and get you through qualifying as well, and then all of a sudden say, yeah, you're not one of my top 23 guys.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly went like, I mean, if he had been looking for an excuse during that time he had come back, I mean, Landon did everything to prove his worth.
And right, so what did he do?
It's bullshit. But, you know, we're going to focus on the players we have now. And we've seen some impressive displays. I mean, Michael Bradley has been our standout player by far. He's looked like the engine, you know. I mean, a lot of people, look, I'm of the opinion that, like, I'm happy with his form. I like the way he's playing. I was a person who wasn't happy about his move from Roma. Like, I understand he needed playing time, but I was not really happy with his return to the MLS because I knew at the time that he was our best player, and I want our best player playing in the best leagues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thankfully, it has not looked like it's really affected his form so far.
It's going to affect him in 4 months here. No. He's not going to lose everything that he's learned.
No, I don't expect him to. But it's just one of those things. You know, training and playing as the best players week in, week out, we know is better than playing at a lower level. And for,
sure.
You know, the fact that we lost so many players in the past couple of years, when we had so many positioned in bigger leagues, is not really the trend. If we had players replacing them and more young players going and
oh come on, he gets to train with Jermaine Defoe. what more could you freaking hope?
And Julio Cesar, you know. Don't.
Yeah, I always love when you look at a roster and you see the list of all the players, and then you see the clubs they play for, right? So you look at Spain, everything's Real. It's, you know, it's Arsenal, it's
Barcelona, United,
it's all the biggest clubs in the world, right?
Manchester United.
The best part was just having, you know, when you could look at the U.S. roster and you could see, you know, Schalke, Roma, some really good quality clubs there. Obviously, Julian Green, Bayern Munich, it just looked nice. And then all of a sudden that changes to Besiktas and Toronto FC, and it's kind of like, you just kind of exhale, like, damn, it doesn't just look as impressive as it could have, you know? But I don't think that changes their quality at this particular time. I think, like I said, long term it might. The one thing that, you know, forgetting about, I think you can talk about everything you want about what's going on with the offense. I think the offense will do okay. I think they're going to, you know, have their spots. The Diamond, Schmeimund, whatever, I don't think that's happening. I think that Beckerman will be in there. But the U.S. goes as far as the back line goes. If that back line can gel and learn how to play, even though none of them have ever played in a World Cup except for Beasley, Fabian Johnson looks great. I'm just, you know, we will go as far as the back four learns to play, and every single one of them has to have the game of their lives every day.
I just wanted to go back to my point really quick and say that despite the fact that Dempsey and Michael Bradley have migrated back to the States, they are the most Eurocentric leaders that team has available. And with the exclusion of Donovan, we can allow that to take over the team's leadership, which I think is a very interesting thing. I mean, you could say it's a personal issue or whatever, but what it boils down to is it might just have been a managerial decision, which I can respect. And
if it works, the respect for him will go much higher.
There you go. And you
hindsight's 20/20, so course, depending on how it goes, of course, it's going to be, you know, one way or another.
I mean,
if this team can get out of the group, then everyone's going to say, you know, you're
he's a genius. Yeah,
a group of death. And by
I won't. If we get out,
Mourinho.
If we get out of the group and only go to the round of 16, I'll say with Donovan, we could have gone to the quarterfinals.
I like your expectations, sir. That is.
And if you win the World Cup,
which is not going to happen.
Fine, yeah. Then I will credit Jurgen.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
Nothing less. Nothing less, Jurgen.
Even then, you'll be like,
no. You, Jurgen. He just has to improve on his third place finish with Germany. So because it's the final, I'll give him some credit.
And I mean, they did start gelling towards these last couple of friendlies, and he got his goals out of
Josie. Yeah,
Josie. Thank you.
Finally,
yeah,
about fucking time, and we've all been waiting.
We're getting a goal out of Jose Altidore now seems like a gift,
right?
Yeah.
You got to be doing something.
I was there when Jose scored. I was there. Yeah. It's a T-shirt. Yeah. No,
it's funny.
Hopefully, someone can wear that in Brazil.
Yeah, I was there.
Coming back from Brazil,
I was there when Jose Altidore scored.
Well, remember, he had a drought like this. Just last year. Last
summer,
year
every year?
No, but I mean, you know, he had the great year at
Alkmaar. Yeah.
Exactly. And then, you know, once he scored that first goal in that Germany game, then the floodgates kind of came open. So, you know, the only hope that we can have is that it's going to be, you know, that one, he scored a great goal against Nigeria. And if he can kind of keep that going, you know, the question is going to be, for me, more about where Bradley, how, you know, where he starts from. Is he going to be playing from deeper where I think he's better? I don't want to try and force him into a number 10, like a classic number 10 role. I think if you do that, you take away his effectiveness, his kind of broader view of the whole.
He's such a good two-way player. You want him to be, if you do a three-man midfield, I mean, you know, a lot of people liked when we went back to that double pivot. You know, you have him as the runner. He's got the engine. He can cover the miles.
Yeah,
he gives you so much on both sides of the ball. He's your box-to-box midfielder.
He's your number eight. You know what I mean? You want him as the number eight. And then this kind of goes back to the Lahm case. Where do you want the guy? You want him in his best position. It varies per player. But in this particular case with Bradley, I think he does the best work out of there. The thing that worries me, I think, is if we have, let's say, Brad Davis or Zuzi, I just don't see those guys doing anything but crossing, and I just need you, maybe Bedoya a little bit more, but we need those guys to be a lot more incisive make a lot more runs into the box to get forward and to actually, like, take shots. Those guys can't just be chalk on the boots, be wide, and just try and get crossing. Brad Davis delivers great crosses, don't get me wrong, but you know what? When you're going to have Josie up there by himself or with Dempsey against Mertesacker or Hummels, Bruno Alves, right? You know, those kind of guys, you know, they're going to eat him up as well. So those guys need to, I think, be very, very incisive, raise their game, and also, you know, not just be providers, but if those guys don't get in there and actually, you know, make themselves dangerous, then you can just key in on Clint and Josie, and they're not going to be that effective.
Definitely. So we're going to move on to our final team of this group. It's Ghana. Ghana have got a very, very mixed team. Their midfield is full of riches, but their defense is complete opposite of the midfield in attack. How far do you see them going in the World Cup?
It's funny. I tried to talk to this point on Twitter with another journalist, and he was talking. Well, I was basically saying the U.S. and Ghana are very, very similar in terms of, not in terms of personnel, but in terms of where each team's strength is. Our strength is in the midfield. Ghana's strength is in the midfield. We have a solid front, you know, line, obviously, especially with Josie. You know, if he's hitting goals, Ghana has Asmaoui Gyan. They had Majid Warris. I think he's injured. And our back line is the question mark, exactly like Ghana's. If there's any advantage we have, it's a goalkeeping. So, but you take the goalkeeping and the back four, Ghana, there's no household names. I mean, you got Opare who plays at Porto, but, you know, Mensah is old. John Boy is pretty awful. You know what I mean? They're absolutely susceptible at the back. But they're so dynamic in midfield. I mean, they have a ridiculous midfield. And they're going to control the game against us. You know, we're going to have to accept that fact. But I think that they're you know, when you've got, you know, the Ayew brothers, you've got Kevin Prince-Boateng, you know,
Essien, Muntari, Asamoah for Juventus.
Exactly. Yeah, and Badu Asamoah is going to be overlapping on the left side. So, you know, they have the exact same kind of makeup in terms of where their strengths and weaknesses are as we do. So, you know, obviously that's going to be the key game for us. If we can beat them, which I know we can, everybody sits there and talks about, oh, you lost to them. You know, we lost to them in 2006 because of a dodgy penalty call. We lost, I get it. And we went to extra time in 2010. We bossed them in the last part of that game. You know, we came so close to winning that game, 2-1 when we were bossed. And, you know, and then, you know, obviously just one mistake and we lost. So it's not like these were blowout wins. Everybody talks like it's so ridiculous, like, oh, we'll never beat Ghana. Every game was close. So there's no reason to think that we can't beat them this time. We could win. We could lose. You know, we have every capability of winning it. We have every capability of losing it. But that midfield is just going to be it's weird. It's like a mirror image watching the two teams. So it's just like, our guys are just going to have to play really, really well. And our defense is just going to have to be excellent. But you know, Asmaoui Gyan, you talk about him, everybody's, oh, he's so great. You know, what the hell is he doing playing in the Emirates then?
Money talks.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was Gyan who said, he's like, not those damn Americans again or something along those lines. I think he's pretty sick of playing against the Americans because they are pretty sick of playing against them.
I think he's more sick of Luis Suarez.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
But the thing about Gyan is that they're
very talented. They're very talented, like I said, but their back line is no great shakes, nothing to be afraid of. I don't think there's any reason to fear them.
Yeah, Jordan Ayew had the hat trick yesterday, right?
Yeah, and him and his brother.
Yeah, he and his brother. I mean, Andre's a quality player. I mean, he's a dangerous player. He's a player of some class. I mean, he's not, sure, you know, world-class or anything, but he's a player who really does give a lot. They've got a lot of talent across the pitch, but I mean, to your point, Robert, I mean, there's no question that the United States have more than a fighting chance against Ghana. You know, you go out and give a committed, organized performance, and they can go out and get something. But I'm with you, though. I think, you know, the winner of that match has a huge leg up in terms of qualification. Because look, Portugal are a good team. You know,
on paper, on a good day, but we've seen so much out of them that we don't know they're going to show up. Mm-hmm. They could easily lose to either or both of
I think they're
Ghana
a great team
or,
on their day when everything goes right for them. Well, otherwise, they're not.
Well, but even if they're not, we know the difference of having a player like the only teams that have a player of that caliber. Well, I guess they're actually the only team with a player of that caliber, but Germany has so much talent across the board. There are people who can bring the sparks of brilliance, but the other two teams don't have a player anywhere near that realm, and a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo
can do things on his own.
Well, he gives you a leg up in every game. I mean, you were talking about giving them 1-0.
Yeah.
It's the Cristiano factor, and Cristiano is a guy who is on a plateau with only one other player who really should, in any
Nicholas
game that's Bentner. In any game that's the greatest striker that ever lived.
Yeah.
He says to himself every morning. Yeah,
you know he says it to himself in the mirror. That's not a doubt.
I think that
that's
mirror is broken.
No shit. But having a man like Cristiano can make all the difference. You know, like, I mean, I'm sure, Robert, when you saw the USA play against Turkey and the way we were at the back, and you're thinking about Cristiano running its defense, you're just shaking your head and holding it in your hands, and you think of what he could do. Because honestly, Cristiano's the kind of guy that will not forgive any of those. And
even at 85%, even if he's not fit.
And he said he's at 99%. And that, like,
0.99.
That, if he says that, he would say he's 100% unless he was significantly below.
So put it this way. If you want to see utter domination and, like, just fear, rewatch that second leg against Sweden in the playoff. Look what he did in Stockholm. I mean, the quality and the speed and the finishing.
He turned them into believers.
He even made IKEA break down and
believers.
Cry.
That was so ridiculous to watch what he single-handedly did to them. But that's what he can do. I mean, basically, he, you know.
Happy because I'm a Norwegian, so I was happy to see the Swedes die and cry.
But
what would a World Cup be?
When you watch that, he can do whatever he wants. The hope is... You're going to have, let's see, he's probably going to be playing on the left, so that's probably why we've got Fabian Johnson out there, which is going to severely limit him getting forward. And then you're basically talking about, you're going to have to triple up basically on him, which is going to be coming over, Fabian Johnson, and then Jeff Cameron pinching in as well, just to try and, you know, contain him to some bit. That leaves a hell of a lot of space for somebody like Nani. That leaves a hell of a lot of space for Morelos to unleash some bombs, which he's shown he can do as well. You know, it's all going to be trying to contain him to maybe one, maybe two. But again, if we can at least get forward and score two or three ourselves, you know, if they're not having their best day in the back, then we can do that. We have to be at our best. But it's possible, like I said, you know, just got to get them on the day that they don't play perfect football.
Right. All right, Mark, what do you think about the Ghana team, though? How do you expect them to line up and face in the tournament?
I'm probably going to say that they're going to go with Asamoah up front and Kevin Prince Boateng slotted into the CAM position. I mean, he's obviously a big star for Schalke and used to be for AC Milan. So I think he's somebody that...
No, not since then. He moved on since then. He left Schalke. Where'd he go? Do you remember, Robert? He left Schalke, right? Didn't he?
I did not know that he left Schalke.
No. Maybe I'm
he left Milan to go to Schalke.
You were thinking of a completely different player. Okay?
Yeah, I think.
I'm the one who's off. I'm sorry about that.
I think people are sort of underestimating how, you know, high intensity this Ghana offense is right now, because they've got Essien, Muntari, Ayew, and Asamoah, and then with Kevin Prince Boateng and his scissor kicks and stuff like that, you know, providing just that extra edge of attack for them.
He's got a bit of flair.
I'm
more worried about the combination on the left, which would be Asamoah overlapping with Christian Atsu. That kid's good.
Do you think Atsu's going to start?
Well, remember, Warris has an injury. Warris got injured, so he might not be playing. So that's going to open up a spot. There's a very good chance he's not. He picked up a thigh injury that's apparently pretty bad. Right. I don't think it's going to rule him out of the tournament, but I don't think that he'll be playing in the first game. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to do some mixing and matching. So I think, I think you might see Atsu. Essien... You know, you're certainly not going to get the best Essien. You're not getting 2005 Essien, which I would have been totally terrified of. So luckily, that's not going to be the issue. But Muntari will be in there.
And what about their back line? I mean, you see, well, I mean, they have a couple injuries now. Or that
Opare, Boy, and Asamoah. So again, it's completely it's a beatable back line, and I believe I don't even their goalkeeper. Where does he even play? I'm trying to remember. Like I said, there's nothing. There's no. We definitely have the advantage at goalkeeper. I'll tell you that back to the U.S. really quick. Tim Howard's going to have to play, be the best goalkeeper in the world. Also, if we're going to get out of this thing,
yeah, he's going to need to.
He's going to be peppered. And
the goalkeeper used to play for Birmingham. I think Kingston did.
What's that?
Birmingham City, Kingston used to play for there. Was it Birmingham? I think.
Ghana keeper.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know, actually. I just know, like I said, when I think of, African keepers, I think of Enyama. I think Enyama's a fantastic keeper.
Yeah, he's a great keeper.
And then it's kind of everybody else. So I'm not too familiar with him. And, like I said, I watch a lot of football, and that's exactly...
Just a quick question. What do you think about... obviously Tim Howard is going to be our number one for the United States.
Yeah.
I was of the mind, I understand why we stay with Howard. Do you feel we're going to be in capable hands with Brad Guzan after this tournament? Because I think it's about time for the changing of the guard.
Yeah. This will be the end for Tim Howard. I mean, this is it. And I think Guzan's 29, 30 right now. What better practice than to get consistently battered at Villa?
He's facing
as many quality shots as you could possibly.
I'm saying it's great practice.
Yeah. Oh, the best. And then he spent the 1 or 2 years under Friedel. He comes in, he's taking the job for himself. He took the job from Shea Given. It's not like a player like De Gea, who's obviously a wonderful keeper, but, at least up until this past year, De Gea would sit around and, maybe face 2 or 3 shots a game. Now, of course, so what's he getting out of it?
He's one of those keepers to me that feels like he actually benefits from his youth because of his technique, being a little bit unconventional, like his youthful reflexes benefit him.
It's very acrobatic, if anything.
No, it's acrobatic, but we all know that like players depend on acrobatics and speed and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to it, it seems like form over time might...
I mean, for a general goalkeeper, he'll adapt.
He'll adapt.
It would be really sad and ironic if a new goalkeeper came out of the US and he got like really well good in the last 4 years and he took Guzan's place for the next World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's always possible. It's always possible. And the thing is, that's on Guzan. I hope there is a young goalkeeper.
Well, it's not
emerges.
On him.
No. It is on him. It is on him. You know what? He will be the number one from here on out. But I really hope there is a young goalkeeper who pushes him, because a goalkeeper who pushes him, who all of a sudden who emerges in the next couple of years, will only push Guzan to be that much better. And we want, just like a club, you want to see it a country. You want to see these players pushing each other for their spots. And sure. And that's huge. So
you've got the young guys, the MLS guys. You've got obviously Sean Johnson, Bill Hamid. Maybe even Zach McMath. You've got Cody Cropper, who's playing out in Europe. There's plenty of stuff that's kind of coming up. Obviously, Raimondo and Howard are going to be, this is kind of the end of their cycles. But
right. That's
one thing. One thing I don't worry about is the U.S. in goalkeeping.
So let's get to our preview in terms of what we think our predictions are for how this group is going to end up. Robert, give us your picks, 1 through 4. How will this group finish?
No
wishy-washy. We need to make solid picks.
Yeah, I have no problem being wrong, because there's really no consequence whatsoever.
We're all going to be wrong, so...
There's nothing that will happen or change anybody's life or my own if I'm wrong, so... And I would never...
The internet police will be all over
It will change your life, because you'll be happy if you're right, so...
You'll be able to cite this as a source.
Yeah, you'll have eternal happiness,
I've got...
Eudaimonia, as the Greeks call it.
I've got Germany finishing first. I've got the U.S. finishing second.
Ooh. That is brave. That's brave.
I don't think that there's any reason why they can't. And like I said, if I'm wrong, I don't even care, because I would never forgive myself if it was the other way around. So I've got the U.S. coming in second, Portugal third, Ghana fourth.
Very nice. All right, let's go with you, Mark. What is your prediction for this group? How shall it go?
I think my predictions have been the easy ones in the last couple of podcasts, so I'm going to say it. Germany number one, Portugal number two. I think it's all in our minds. I don't think there's any delusions that it's going to end any other way. So,
but right. What about third and fourth?
Third and fourth? Let's say the U.S. over Ghana. I believe in them.
Okay. And you, Alex?
I love this country, but I think the U.S. will be fourth. I think Argentina will be third, and Portugal second, and Germany first.
There you go. Yeah, like I said, I will not be shocked if we go 3 and out. I don't think we'll finish as 32nd like we did in 98. I think that I think it goes to Australia.
That was a shame.
I won't be shocked if we go 3 and out, but I won't be shocked if we advance.
Yeah, I think it's a fair response. I mean, I've got us getting a result. I don't know if it'll be enough to get us out of the group. I've probably got us third. I'm going to go to add a little variation to our picks. I'm going to go with Germany, Ghana.
Oh.
Right. USA, Portugal. Whoa. Cristiano with the miserable performance while Messi goes on to win the World Cup. And then that'll settle
the
day.
It'll never happen. Messi was never trained at Manchester United. Ergo, he doesn't have what it takes to win the World Cup.
Clearly, he does not have the skills. So I'm going to go there. It's a little bit different. I thought about going out, but, you know, I was going to have to spring for the United States second, but Robert, you picked up the torch.
Sorry.
No, it's fantastic.
We like the variation.
I actually feel a little more comfortable.
Because I want somebody to go Ghana and U.S. and Portugal and Germany not making it.
Robert, you and I know that's not going to – Germany is – if there's one pick for a team that will make it out of the group, I think Germany is one pick that we
– Yeah, I don't think anybody
– It would be amazing if they didn't, though.
Oh yeah. My God! I mean, if they didn't make it out of the group, they need Beckenbauer on the pitch to fire, and like I don't know, Yogi Love, if he cannot get this team out of this group, he needs to be sacked on the spot on the pitch
at full time.
No, it needs to be Beckenbauer.
Halftime. They're doing
Beckenbauer coming in.
If Germany does not win this World Cup, Love's gone. He's had too many opportunities.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, to take your points that you wrote about, yeah, absolutely.
He's literally gone. He will disappear. Like, no one will see him anymore.
Under a flurry,
he'll become a ghost
with giant beer steins.
A ghost of German past.
Yeah,
the ghost of German past. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he's had his leash. Yeah. He's had one of the most talented squads at his disposal, and it's on him to make it happen. Honestly, I picked Germany to make it to the final myself.
Yeah,
And it looks like Robert, you've picked them to win it all, right? That's your pick.
I do have. I honestly. I mean, my superstitious side. Like I said, it took Brazil 24 years in between winning their third and fourth. It took years between their third and fourth, and Germany's on three, and it's been 24 years since they last won in 1990. So.
All right, let's see it. I wouldn't bet against that, really. I mean,
sticking to that.
Germany was my pick. I swapped because I just felt like I've sided with Argentina, but that's just...
I think Ozil's going to shine so brightly. People are going to be blind.
Germany, Argentina in the final.
It's going to be Arsenal who filed Germany to glory. That's what Alex and I believe.
Yeah.
Probably Podolski and Ozil.
Shocking.
Good for Germany, I guess.
Yeah, good for Germany.
Yeah.
What about Pear? Pear's going to score like a freaking big fucking header. That's what it's going to do.
We can only hope. Everybody can enjoy a big fucking German scoring a big fucking header.
That's true.
Hopefully that's what we'll see. And maybe if we're lucky, our Americans will make it through as well. And I think they're fully capable.
Our Americans? Your Americans.
Oh, fuck. The rest of us, except for you fucking visitor, you better embrace them as your country while you're here. You're here for the tournament.
I'll get painted.
Yeah. Like I said, no shock either way for me. It's almost a little bit relaxing, not at all, but it feels just like if we, you know, like I said, we got the toughest group. We've got our yo-yo effect. We, you know, 90, obviously we were shit. 94, we do good. 98, we do shit. 2002, we do great. It's the yo-yo. So, again, it's not going to be shocking. We're on the bad year.
And we have the toughest group we've had out of any of those.
I have no false illusions and sitting there saying, oh, no, we're definitely going to do it. But, you know, like I said, there's no consequence for me guessing wrong.
One draw, one win, you'll believe they can do it anyway. So.
Yeah.
Well, why not? But, you know, it's the beautiful thing. That's why we're, you know, we live the American dream. We win one, we can do it. You know?
That's right.
And honestly, you win that first match, anything can happen. I mean, honestly, all you need to do is not lose that first match. Anything can happen, really, there. Exactly. You just cannot lose to Ghana.
They can beat.
Well, I pray we can see it. For the three Americans here on this podcast today, I say we wish that it happens.
Absolutely.
We'll be happy to see it. We will be cheering them on from all facets of the globe. And for those of us here in Los Angeles.
In this country, too.
Yeah, plus some,
it will be. It will be. But, I mean, honestly, this is the biggest sporting event we've seen in our lives, and in terms of globally. And I think that the United States is starting to catch up to that. And, you know, we've seen, we've got pretty good coverage.
Oh, you mean come out to their senses about it?
Yeah, I mean, they've come to their senses, but I mean, they're really coming there. And so we're on the precipice of something big. And I think that you know, people really will pay more attention to this World Cup than any of the ones in the past. And it would really be a service to American soccer for us to be able to get
escape this group. Joaquin, did you notice kind of today, and it made a lot of sense. Did you notice, remember every single World Cup before this, how we were inundated with mainstream media articles, everything that was about, you know, will this be the World Cup that makes Americans fans? Did you notice that there hasn't been a lot of that now?
Yeah, it seems like we've transcended that barrier. We moved up to the next notch, at least. Yeah, yeah. That's great. It's almost it's observed and it's appreciated in a way that people already kind of know it. It's not like this is this foreign thing. It's like, no, we're talking about soccer.
Yeah, and it's not like I have like a pregame show with Michael Strahan explaining how, you know, how like a 3-5-2 is like a prevent defense or something like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and that's like, I mean, we're really seeing a great trend. I mean, between what we saw with NBC, I think the steps that NBC made this past year with our coverage of the Premier League and whatnot was a huge stride for the game in America.
Right.
Just in terms of offering that and setting the standard, because that's the best thing could happen for the viewer and the consumer. Yeah. Because
they're not dumbing it down, finally.
Thank God.
Right. And that's – or less so. Let's put it that way. That was
now that works for Fox. So yeah.
When I worked at Fox, believe me, it was mandatory. Believe me. You know how – how many fights I got into about, I'm like, do we really have to do this? Do we really have to? And they're like, yeah, we have to. It's your job. So you have to. But I mean, inside I was stewing every single time that we had to do some dumb, this would be the American equivalent of the Yankees, you know, this team here and all this kind of stuff. And everything had to be associated to American sports. And it was just, it was so freaking annoying. Now it seems like at least, with ESPN and ABC, they've kind of turned that corner, and they just basically say, "All right, it's a simple game. I think people get it now." And they've, you know, they enough people watched it.
Last simple time. Enough, right? I mean, yeah. Seriously.
It's been very, very few. It's been about the sport. It's not been about the marketing or about the transition to the mainstream. It's just been about the sport, and I think that's been one of the best parts in the whole build-up to the tournament.
Thank God for that.
Entirely. Well, we're looking forward to enjoying this tournament all across town. This is the day before the tournament begins. We will be out in force all across Southern California, those of us here involved with the Red Card District, and we'll be watching the matches at all of our favorite local hotspots, including the Cock and Bull and the Fox and Hounds. Maybe we'll catch you at the Fox and Hounds someday for a match.
That's where I was for the Champions League final.
Damn straight. we'll be there. We'll be there for the tournament. It's exciting. We're getting down the nitty-gritty. The tournament's about to start. So look forward to continuing coverage here from the Red Card. Just thank you so much, Robert. It's been a pleasure.
No problem, guys. It was fun. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
I've got something.